Excuse me. Can I have your attention, please? Business owners, managers, sales professionals, are you tired of being disrespected by prospects that quibble over price, make excuses, avoid commitment, and pick your brain only to give those ideas to your competitors? Join us for the Sandler Training One-Day Sales Mastery Bootcamp, April 12th at 9 o'clock a.m. In this bootcamp, you will learn how to deal with people who can't or won't make a decision, stop creating proposals used as bargaining chips to negotiate with your competitor, quit wasting time with people who will never buy from you, avoid making polished presentations to people who just want the lowest price. To register, call 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275, or go online to crossroads.sandler.com. That's April 12th at 9 o'clock a.m. Sandler Training's one-day sales mastery bootcamp. Register by calling 208-429-9275, 208-429-9275, 208-429-9275.
It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on News Talk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
And welcome to the weekend. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. This is the Sandler Training Hour. Each week, we bring you tactics and strategies to help improve business, management, sales, growth, those type of topics. And I'm joined in the studio today with my son, Justin, also my business partner. We thought we'd talk a little bit today about the topic of why salespeople fail. So, Justin, let's start first with the topic of why most sales training doesn't work. Because business owners, they, and maybe it's not just sales training, maybe it's customer service management. What typically happens is you might engage in some level of training, seminars, that type of thing, and yet it doesn't often work. Your thoughts?
You know, it's something we run into a lot, and people say, oh, for example, we do a number of workshops. We have one coming up that's a one-day boot camp, and people say, oh, I've done that Sandler thing, when what they really did is come to one training.
Right.
Going to one training is not going to facilitate change. It's not going to make a big impact on your business. It's not going to make a big impact on the bottom line. What will make an impact is if you can figure out a way to have sustainable change. That's why one of the things Sandler does is we don't really do a lot of one-day workshops. Yes, we have them, and most of our clients come to them because it's a great shot in the arm. It gets their head in the right place. But it's not something, if someone off the street said, hey, I want to get involved in Sandler training, I want to do Sandler training, and they came to this one workshop, yes, I promise you'd get a lot of techniques and tactics out of it, but it wouldn't be something that in 2 months you'd be thinking, oh, that workshop. Generally, after about a week and a half, this thing called life happens after you go to an event, and the event pumps you up, you get excited, you start using some of the tips and tactics, but then this thing called life happens, and before you know it, you're back into the same rut that you've been stuck in, doing the same thing you've always been doing.
Yeah, it really is all about repetition. Training works if it's repeated over and over and over again. To get sustainable change, you have to not only know technically what things should I do different, but what also should I stop doing. I had a past client reach out and engage us recently, and it's been, I'd say, at least 10 years, probably longer than that, since they had been involved in Sandler. And so I said, so let me hear your upfront contract. It was laughable. And then he stopped and said, I guess maybe I forgot what the upfront contract is. Can you remind me? I said, okay, so let's try the pain funnel. Ask me the pain funnel questions. Now I'm just being mean.
Right? It suits you well.
But he couldn't come. I said, okay, how about something simple? Your 30-second commercial. Give me your 30-second commercial. And, of course, it was all features and benefit-based. Even with training, if it isn't repeated, you're going to fall back into your old habits, back into your old patterns, and back into some of the things that create the problem that drove you to training in the first place. Yet you forgot all about it.
That is so true. That's one of the reasons why I feel like the most I get out of Sandler comes from when I'm training, because I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly being reminded of, oh, this is why I need to do that. Or, oh, I really botched that last call because I forgot X, Y, Z. And I get it because I am in front of it every day. I am training it every week. It's constantly being refreshed, and I'm constantly being reminded of where I, as a trainer, program falling down. Right.
And I think the other thing that sets Sandler training apart from most stereotypical trainers is we practice what we preach. We not only train sales training, but we also sell for a living. So you're getting real live experience. And I think oftentimes people don't realize what may even be driving them to attend training. Why should I be involved in training? Well, a couple of things. One is ask yourself the question, are you or your salespeople giving information to prospects when what you really should be doing is getting information? Most of us are too eager to tell about our business, what we do, how we do it, I can help you, how can I help you, here's what I can do. And really what we should be doing is letting the buyer have the front and center stage and listening to their issues.
Yeah, that reminds me of one of my favorite Sandler rules is you get paid on the amount of information you get, not on the amount of information you get. In the day of the internet, people have access to any information they could possibly want. So your expertise is not in what you know, it's in finding out what the other person is struggling with and helping them find that perfect solution to get over that issue.
And I think too often we actually don't know the problem, so we're fixing the wrong issue. If you're busy telling the buyer what they should buy without first doing a thorough diagnostics of what are their issues, that's sales malpractice.
Exactly. You know, another thing you can watch for is, are your cost of sales margins increasing? Is it becoming more and more expensive to find a new client? That could be an indication that some training might be a good fit for
you. Spending too much money on marketing, trying to get those elusive leads, and really maybe I should be developing my team so that they have the skill necessary. Other reason I think that you might engage in training is to shift the culture. You and I are passionate about sales, and we believe everybody is in sales, but most people don't see it that way. We did an engagement with another client a couple of weeks ago. It was the whole company. So I asked them, okay, show of hands, how many of you are in sales? And of course, everybody from the sales team raised their hand. And I said, so now look around, because apparently they're the only ones that deal with our customers and bring revenue in the door. And now people started to look at me like, is that a trap question?
It was.
It was. Then I asked, so how many are in sales? And of course, now all the hands raised, because if you're client facing at any level, you're selling. If you're putting together things behind the scene, it's your skills that cause people to buy. So recognizing that I may need to change my culture to make sure everybody understands we are a sales business.
That's a great point. You know, another thing that may be an indication that some training is needed is that your team may be too willing to give up price in order to close business. I was talking to someone the other, this was probably 3 or 4 months ago, and he was getting ready for this event and telling me all about all these things he was doing. And as we're talking through it, I just kept asking questions. By the end of the meeting, he realized, you know, I'm going to this event and selling a $5 widget that cost me $15 to $20 to make.
Right.
Am I paying people to
take my stuff, right?
Right?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. Yeah. So you got to be real careful with that discounting and how far does it go in your culture.
Yeah, that's a great point. The other thing I see is inconsistency. You go into an organization. In fact, if you're a business owner or manager, try this. Interview your people one-on-one and ask them the question, so map out for me, what is your sales process? What are the steps you go through to get a client? You're going to probably get some deer in the headlights because they haven't thought through their process. And once you prompt them to get started, if there's 5 salespeople, there's going to be 5 different methodologies. What kind of problems grow, Justin, from not having a consistent plan?
Firstly, if you think about the manager and their role in helping all these different salespeople reach their goals and succeed, if you have 5 salespeople who have 5 different processes, you have to, as the manager, know all 5 processes and be able able to coach to all five processes. Now, I don't know about you, but as a sales manager and coach, I don't have time to learn a different process for every person I'm working with.
Right.
So having that consistent process saves time, energy, saves money, because the other thing, you know where they are in the process. If you can look at a pipeline report and see, and by pipeline, I mean who's said, hey, I'm interested in what you do, and see where everybody is, you can get a good understanding of, well, if these three are on stage five, they're likely to close within this month, whereas these four are stage two, they may be next month, and these 10 are stage one, and they may be the month after that, or they may not even go at all. So you've got to have that kind of information and knowledge in order to get where you're trying to go.
And I think lastly, it's vital that you recognize that mediocrity is a cancer. And the goal in every business is to defeat that cancer. And you do that by keeping the saw sharp. And most people do their sales training and their role playing on prospects. Now that's insane. So you're going to go blow an opportunity and practice on somebody who is potentially going to buy from you? I don't think so. So with that said, shameless plug for our boot camp coming up.
So April 12th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., you can come at our office or online. We've got a one-day sales boot camp. We're going to be going over what is this Sandler system and how can you use it to improve what your selling process is.
I'm Jim Stevens. My guest today is Justin Stevens. We're available at area code 208-429-9275, or you can find us on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. We'll be back just after this. And welcome to Behind the Business. My name's Jim Stevens. My guest today is Nathan Berry. Nathan is the founder of ConvertKit. It's a business that Nathan built because he needed it. You started as a blogger, and you wanted a way to manage the contacts, the people that made inquiries for your blogs, and here comes this business. Give our listeners just the thumbnail sketch of what you do for your clients.
Yeah, so we're email marketing for professional bloggers. We're a software company of about 25 people, and if you've ever used like a MailChimp or a Constant Contact, we're like that, but specific for professional bloggers.
And so you built a team of 25 full-time employees. They're located in different locations all over the globe. And you've been in business how long?
4 years.
4 years. The first 2 years were kind of slogging it.
Right.
And then the last 2 years have been exponential growth.
Yeah, so we've added an employee a month basically for the last 2 years.
So how do you find and select the right employee when most of your operation is scattered?
Right. So the first thing and the biggest benefit with a remote company, sometimes people think the benefit is that you don't have to pay for office space. That's not the benefit. Office space is cheap. The biggest benefit is that you get to hire the best talent wherever you find them, and you don't have to have them live in a specific city. So the first thing that we do is we make sure to be a very transparent and public company. So if you want to know how much revenue we make, our exact process of doing business, you know, what we learned last week in business, we write a blog about all of that. And so the first thing we get is all of these people reading our blog and following along. So then when we want to put out and, you know, say, hey, we're hiring two new engineers, or we're hiring a customer support person, then we get hundreds of applications because of that blog.
So the blog is driving the people who might want to apply.
Yeah, and then the great thing is you get a lot fewer applications who are like, I want this job because I want a job.
Instead, I need a job.
Right. Instead, you get applications where people are like, I love your platform, I'm a customer, or I love your, you know, I love your mission, I love what you're about. And you don't have to explain that initial context. And then when it comes to getting more applicants in, because we want to pull from a larger pool, then we'll post job listings on sites that are specific to people who want to work remotely. Mm-hmm. So there's one called weworkremotely.com, and we'll get lots of good applicants from there.
Mm. So how do you make that final decision to hire?
Yeah, so we look for a couple of things. Because the majority of our communication is written, we ask a lot of written questions. So like when we were hiring for a sales director recently, we were asking questions in writing of like, hey, if the sales team you were leading had these problems, how would you approach it? And some people respond with like five pages and you're like, oh, that's not going to cut it. And some people are like, well, I'd just see what the problems were and then I'd solve them. You know, and so you can kind of eliminate people at both ends of the spectrum.
Right, right.
And you can hire the people who are the great writers, because usually a great writer is a great communicator. And so we look for
great
that
idea.
Really a lot.
Great idea. We'll give your contact information in case someone listening would like to check you guys out.
Yeah, so just go to ConvertKit.com, or if you want to get in touch with me, just Nathan@ConvertKit.com.
Awesome. We'll be back with more of Nathan just after this next segment of the Sandler Training Hour. Have you noticed that you can smell a salesperson a mile away? It's the smell of neediness and desperation. This is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Listen to my client, Bethany Brediger, with Sonatrol Pacific, share her experience learning how to stop selling and become a trusted advisor.
Everything you teach is centered around not doing what the customer expects, that dance that you do back and forth that I was stuck doing and didn't like my job when I was having to do that. And changed my actual job description and the way that I interact with clients so much so that now I feel very proud of what I do, and I love going to work, and I don't feel like I'm getting caught in that dance anymore. I'm able to actually talk to people, and they forget I'm a salesperson because of these techniques. They end up selling it themselves, and I feel like I'm not even selling.
Stop the buyer-seller dance and learn to love your career again. Call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275, or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. Excuse me. Can I have your attention, please? Business owners, managers, sales professionals, are you tired of being disrespected by prospects that quibble over price, make excuses, avoid commitment, and pick your brain only to give those ideas to your competitors? Join us for the Sandler Training One-Day Sales Mastery Boot Camp, April 12th at 9 o'clock a.m. In this boot camp, you will learn how to deal with people who can't or won't make a decision, stop creating proposals used as bargaining chips to negotiate with your competitor, quit wasting time with people who will never buy from you, avoid making polished presentations to people who just want the lowest price. To register, call 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275, or go online to crossroads.sandler.com. That's April 12th at 9 o'clock a.m. Sandler Training's one-day sales mastery boot camp. Register by calling 208-429-9275, 208-429-9275, 208-429-9275. And welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. My guest today is Justin. We've been talking about why salespeople fail. In our first segment, we recognize that there are some issues that salespeople face that really prompt them at some point to say, you know what I'm doing isn't working, and I need to do something different. So, Justin, what are some of the symptoms that somebody might observe that would say, hey, maybe I should explore attending this upcoming boot camp, for example?
Sure. So one of the big ones is a painfully long selling cycle. So the amount of time it takes someone from saying, hi, my name's Justin, to here's my credit card, let's do business together.
Right.
One great way to increase your cash flow is if you can cut your sales cycle in half, you've doubled your revenue.
Right. You'll increase your capacity because you'll have more people in your pipeline because you've figured out how to stop the insanity of a long sales cycle.
You know, another reason someone might want to join is because of unmet forecasts. We all do forecasting. Generally, if you're missing the forecasted goals, that's an indication that either there is no process or the process that you're currently using isn't giving you the results that you can forecast on.
Right.
So if you're forecasting a great year, well, let's look at it in the past. If you forecasted having a great year last year,
yeah,
and you got to this point this year and you're thinking, man, where did we go wrong? That's an indication that getting some training might be a good thing for your organization.
It's really embarrassing if you think about it to go to your manager with a projected monthly goal and then consistently fall short. Yet it's very predictable why that's happening. You just have to have the perspective to figure out what are the bad sales habits that cause you to continue to miss the forecast and to erode profit. I think things like not having a good start to a meeting, we call it the upfront contract. Look at it this way. Your buyers don't know how to buy from you. And it's your job to lead them through a discovery process to determine if they're a good fit for you or not. And if you don't have a good way to start that meeting, you're not going to have a good outcome.
Exactly. Prospects can be demanding as well. So when it comes to working with them and they keep pushing, it's like if you have a rag, let's say you're cleaning and you got a wet rag and you wring it out, how do you know when it's empty? How do you know when the water's gone?
When you squeeze and it doesn't drip.
So as prospects prospects, as buyers, we're all trained from watching other people buy. If you start seeing a drip, let's squeeze a little harder. Let's see how much water we can get out of this rag. So when it comes to sales, if you're not careful, if you're not watching how easily you give up, how easily you make concessions, you're going to quickly get to that point where you're the rag and you're getting dripped on.
Today's buyers are very savvy, and they know how to get a good deal. They know how to squeeze the rag. My favorite story about that, we years ago bought a townhouse, and we were remodeling it, and our daughter was going to live there for a while, and we ended up selling it. Well, I wanted the floors to be all hardwood. And we do, in my remodeling company, we do business with a couple of local floor covering folks, and I had them give me quotes. One was around $7,000, the other was about $6,000. Somebody said to me, a friend said, hey, if you're putting hardwood floors in, you ought to give this guy a call. We just had him do our project, and it really turned out nice. I said, okay, and why not? So I gave him a call and asked him to give me a bid. I met him on site. He handed me the proposal. His price was $29.95. I looked at his proposal, and I said, $29.95, which he thought I meant.
Oh, my gosh, how's it so expensive?
And I really meant,
oh, my gosh, how do you stay in business?
But guess what he did? He started dripping. I just said $29.95, and he said, well, I could probably do it for less, which I wasn't asking for less, but now that's like a red flag in front of a bull. They're going to charge. I couldn't help myself. I said, well, how much less? He said, well, I could probably knock about $500 off. Now he's at $2,500, and of course, I should have just been happy and said, okay, but instead, I got to keep squeezing until I'm sure there's no water. I said, that's the best you can do? He said, well, maybe, and it got him down another $150. Signed the contract. He did outstanding work. It was really a phenomenal job. For that price, I was very concerned that you get what you pay for, and it was going to be a mess, so I kept my eye on it, and it was so good. The next time we had a project that called for hardwood, I said, hey, call Tom. He'll do a great job. And so pick up the phone, ring, ring, ring. He's not there. He's gone out of business. He went out of business because he had that low money tolerance. He thought $3,000 was a lot of money. Therefore, he discounted prematurely. But what we train in Sandler is to ask questions. If when I said $29.95, if he'd have just said,
you're saying that for a reason.
Right. That alone, I would have said, well, it just seems like a low price compared to the other bids I got. I would have said that. I wasn't trying to work him on price. He worked himself on price because he hooked me to squeeze the rag. And so oftentimes salespeople end up prematurely discounting. They end up in bidding wars. We have a client, a fairly new client, who went out on a sales call, and this client was taking five proposals. And he gave her a proposal, and then he said, let's do this. We had just covered this in training. He said, let's do this. Let's get our calendars out. Pick a time when you know you will have all the rest of the bids in. I'll come back, and then we can talk about which one makes the most sense. He did exactly what he heard in training. When he got back, they scheduled it for a week later. When he got back 1 week later and met with the woman, she said, you know, I've had five people come out, and not one of them was interested enough to call me back or schedule a follow-up appointment. And she bought from him, right?
Yep.
And she literally had all five proposals laying out on the table, and he could see them, and he went through and showed her the pros and cons, and she ended up signing up with them. Can you imagine that? Five salespeople went out, took their time to put together an estimate, and didn't follow up, didn't schedule a follow-up meeting. Ludicrous.
It's amazing how that follow-up piece of the pie is the number one thing. Some free consulting. If you want to get great at sales, really great. If you want to intentionally double what you're doing now, follow up better.
Yeah, really.
That is literally all you have to do. If you put a system around how you follow up, you will increase your sales, because 9 out of 10 salespeople get bored following up, and then they write their own script of what the prospect's going to say when they finally do get them, and then they flush them before they ever even talk to the prospect.
So true. Justin knows exactly what he's talking about, because he's a follow-up machine. When we have somebody in our pipeline that I flush, Justin doesn't take no for an answer. He thinks no means not yet. And then he just calls and calls. And I've seen deals that were 5 years old resurrected because of his persistence. So great, great suggestion. Just following up makes a huge difference. I heard a statistic that in trade shows, if you do a trade show or home shows or anything like that, less than 20% of the people who ask for help are ever followed up on by the company that they visited. So why would you spend 2 or 3 days of your life in a trade show and not follow up?
Insanity.
We're out of time in this segment. Our next segment is called Entrepreneur Radio. We get to interview local and regional entrepreneurs, get to hear their story, some of their successes and challenges. I love that part of the program because we get to learn vicariously through other people's success. If you are interested in being on that segment of our program, please reach out to us at area code 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Or you can catch us on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. Justin, tell about that boot camp we got coming up.
So it's April 12th. It's in about 2 weeks. It's going to be from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. here at our office. We'll also have a number of clients who are remote. So if you'd prefer to attend from your home, or if you're up in Canada and want to join us, you're welcome to as well. The cost is going to be $399 per person. We do company discounts if you have more than one person come in. Give us a call.
Yep, it'll be a lot of fun. We'll have a good time. So we'll be back just after this. And welcome back to Behind the Business. In this segment of our program, we get to meet the people and hear the story behind some local businesses. We actually have a national business here. Nathan Berry is the founder of ConvertKit. Nathan wrote a software program to service his own client base when he was primarily blogging, and that's grown into an organization. He employs 25 people from all over the world, really. So, Nathan, let's talk about in managing people's activity, especially if they're remote. By the time you look at the results, it's too late.
Right.
You know, if I'm looking at financial numbers, that's past history. I need to look at what are we doing to get there. So in our jargon, we call it KPIs, key performance indicators. What kind of activities do you expect of your people that would help you as an owner manage that they're doing the right things?
Yeah, so the first thing that we do is we really focus on trust. And so we don't, you know, look over someone's shoulder to make sure that they're working or care about time spent in a seat. We care about the results they get. So within that, you're right that you have to have the leading indicators and the, you know, the lag indicators. And it's taken me a while to learn this on a bunch of different teams, right? Because sales and marketing, well, they're different from each other, but then also they're different from the customer success team. So like on the customer success team, you know, you're answering tickets. And so the lead indicator there would be number of replies that you have. You know, we measure how long you spend on each reply. Huh. And it's not necessarily that less time is better, but it's another indicator of the quality.
Just tells you what your people are doing.
Yeah. And then we can also track it all the way through to, we get happiness scores back from those customers. So that would start to be one of the lag indicators.
Right.
And then even further on is how many of those customers canceled. So in the industry, we call it churn. And so we look at the percentage of customers that canceled. And so we're still working on tying all of that together. But, you know, there the lag indicator would be happiness and churn. And then on the marketing side, you know, they're trying to drive visits to the website and then signups for like demo requests. Mm. Those would be the lead indicators.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess the lag indicators there would be, you know, we're trying to determine quality. And so that would be revenue and then also that churn number.
Do people sign up for a test drive? Do you have some version of a test drive?
Yeah, we do. And so often if you come in, we'll find out a month later if whatever channel we went after, maybe it resulted in low quality customers who churned out after a month or two.
And then you can look at the analytics of what was our strategy and maybe our strategy was off.
Right.
As opposed to our responsiveness.
Yeah. And so that's what we do on a couple teams. I still don't know on the engineering team what good lead indicators or lag indicators would be.
Yeah.
Lag indicators, I know. It's like software quality. It's what features we shipped. The lead indicators are hard because like lines of code written would be a terrible
right.
lead indicator.
Right. Because it may not be quality code.
Right.
Give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you, Nathan.
Yeah, just check us out at ConvertKit.com. And my email is Nathan@ConvertKit.com.
We're going to be back with the final installment of Nathan just after this next segment of the Sandler Training Hour.
You know, I'm a big believer in Sandler sales, and I've been very fortunate to have an opportunity to spend about 5 years in the program. It has helped my sales world immensely. I tell this story often at different groups, to other students in the class, especially newcomers. Sandler sales to me is like muscle memory for the brain. If you become an excellent free throw shooter, you don't stop practicing free throws. If you become a great golfer, you don't stop practicing your swing. It's the same thing with sales. And I come every week for about 5 years, and I leave almost every week with, dang it, I missed a step on this last sale, or that's a piece I need to improve upon. So it becomes automatic, like those free throws and those golf swings.
Excuse me. Can I have your attention, please? Business owners, managers, sales professionals, are you tired of being disrespected by prospects that quibble over price, make excuses, avoid commitment, and pick your brain only to give those ideas to your competitors? Join us for the Sandler Training One-Day Sales Mastery Boot Camp, April 12th at 9 o'clock a.m. In this boot camp, you will learn how to deal with people who can't or won't make a decision, stop creating proposals used as bargaining chips to negotiate with your competitor, quit wasting time with people who will never buy from you, avoid making polished presentations to people who just want the lowest price. To register, call 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275, or go online to crossroads.sandler.com. That's April 12th at 9 o'clock a.m., Sandler Training's one-day sales mastery boot camp. Register by calling 208-429-9275, 208-429-9275, 208-429-9275. And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. My guest today is John Davis. He's the owner of Dowdy's Automotive. I just learned today that Dowdy's has three locations and working to grow a fourth. Welcome, John. Glad to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jim. I appreciate the opportunity.
One would think that you own an automotive repair shop because you're an automotive repair person, but I'm guessing that may not be the case.
Well, it depends who you ask. If you ask my wife if I'm an automotive repair person, she'll point to the piles of half-finished cars in various garages around town. But no, my professional background is in financial services and banking, not in the automotive business. And I think that, you know, I hate to say this, but I think that folks that don't have automotive repair experience probably do as well or better in this industry than others.
Because it is a business.
It is a business, yes. Number one. And yeah. Number two, yeah. It's a customer service business.
It's a great point. So Dowdy's has been in business for years. When was it founded?
The operation originally got started, I believe, in 1983. A gentleman named Dan Dowdy, who was a technician at one of the local General Motors dealerships, got the business going. And we've been in our Federal Way Southeast Boise location since, I believe, 1986.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. Long time ago. Yeah, I was telling Dan before we got on air that in my remodeling business, I had actually remodeled that facility for Dan and his wife, Mary. I think he had the business to support a racing habit.
That is correct.
Yeah. He loved to race, and he had some awesome race cars.
And I believe Dan is still one of the best custom hot rod builders in the western United States.
Wow.
He's based out of Lake Havasu, Arizona, and builds one or two couple $100,000 hot rods a year. Yeah, interesting.
I bet he loves that.
He does.
Yeah,
he's
an artist. Right down as he is an artist. So talk to us, John, about buying a business, because entrepreneurs typically will start a business. You saw an opportunity to purchase a business. Just talk us through that process.
Be happy to do that, Jim. As you know, I'm sort of a serial entrepreneur. I've got three businesses. Mm-hmm. Dowdy's Automotive is one that I came into 10 years ago with a single store location. We've grown it over that time to three stores, looking very much for a fourth, and our master plan calls for 9 stores in the Treasure and Magic Valleys over the next 5 years. Mm. And, you know, we'll see how successful we are in that. But it's very different building a business and starting a business from scratch as opposed to buying one. When you're buying a business, especially in this day and age, it was a little bit different in 2007. You better understand banking. You better understand your books.
Right.
And you better have a very clean set of books. And you better understand ratios and what's going to please the Small Business Administration. Aside from that, there's some operational considerations that go into buying a business. You almost invariably, in my experience, when you buy a business, are going to go through a transition period that's very different than starting one from scratch. When you start something from scratch, Jim, as you know, you're totally invested in it.
Yeah.
Emotionally, financially.
Right.
When you buy something, I hate to say this, but you've sort of got to deconstruct it before you can reconstruct it. And you better have a clear vision on what your operational specialty is and what makes you unique in the marketplace. And you better be really passionate about making that transition, because everything that I purchased in the last 10 years, I can assure you, the old owner, the old staff didn't have the same vision that I did. If you're not willing to sort of dispassionately, almost mercenarily change that,
right,
you're sort of stuck in the middle. And that's not good for customers, not good for the business. I wouldn't dissuade anybody from buying a business, but you better go talk to somebody who's done it 3 or 4 times, really understand it before you do it.
And buried in there is some good advice to someone who is a technician who started the business. Remove yourself from the emotions of operating it. Look at it from the point of view as a banker, from the point of view as as someone who's looking for purely return on investment, what changes would you make if you were the investor?
Well, and the other thing, you know, a business banker here in town I was meeting with a couple of weeks ago said it best. Said, at the end of the day, when we get done with all the ratios, we get done with all of the analysis, and the bank says they're going to approve it, you better have done a reality check. And that reality check is, how am I going to operate that, make that payment to the bank or the Small Business Administration, and does the core business support that? And that involves sitting down and doing a 2 to 3 year business plan and really focusing on the financials. Most folks going into a small business environment, unless they've come out of a corporate environment where they had budget responsibility or they've got an accounting background, probably haven't done that before.
Right. That is so true. I've heard multiple people say, well, I guess if the bank's going to loan me the money, I must be good for it.
Yeah, I've made some loans that I wish I wouldn't have done.
And I've taken some I wished I hadn't, right?
Yep, yep.
It really is. Just because you can get the money doesn't mean it's in your best interest to have it.
That is correct.
And so really separating yourself emotionally from the business and looking at it as an investor, very healthy exercise. What makes Dowdy's different is the customer service model. Talk to us about your customer service model.
I could talk for days on our customer service model, but I think in the automotive service sector's going through a transition. If you look in our country, it's very difficult to get people to come to work as automotive technicians. We have a lot of automotive repair stores in any community that you go into that were started by a technician.
Yeah.
And that technician, like the rest of the population, is getting a little old, probably time to retire, not as passionate about their mission as they used to be. And one thing that we continue to hear day in and day out is that if I can find a mechanic that I can trust, I'm going to be loyal to that individual and give them my business repeatedly. Well, for us, that's part of the equation. You have to be honest. And that goes into your hiring practices. You have to hire individuals that you can go home at night and go to bed feeling very comfortable, that you have general managers and service managers that can do no wrong, that aren't driven by commission, incentive, sales targets to do the wrong thing for the consumer. And that goes back to your culture and who you are as a company. The other thing that you have to do is that you have to have an operating method that differentiates you in the community. In our business, for example, we have two slogans that are more than just slogans. They're how we operate in the morning when we get up. The first is speed of service, and the second is yes. Jim, let me give you a little example. So let's say in your household, you've got 2 or 3 vehicles. They're probably later model, maybe sometime in the last 10 years they were manufactured, and you're pretty dependent on those vehicles. If you wake up tomorrow morning and you find a puddle of stuff on the floor, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
Yeah. It's an inconvenience.
Yeah.
In the past, you'd call up your favorite mechanical shop, and you'd say, I got a puddle of something in my garage. I need to get this vehicle in. And it was very common to get the, well, you know, we're really busy today. It's Monday. I can get you in on Thursday. I've got an opening in my schedule on Thursday. And that doesn't work for those of us that are dependent.
Yeah, right.
So we always talk about speed of service. We want that vehicle in. We want to do it at a time, Jim, that's convenient for you, not for us. And let us manage the backstage. Let us figure out when the technicians and the service managers need to be at work. Let's have long hours, you know, 7:30 in the morning till 6 at night. Let's be there on Saturdays for folks. But when they call and say, boy, I got that puddle of stuff, great. Get it down here. Get AAA. You know, if you can drive it, get it down here. Let's get it diagnosed. Let's get it out of our shop in the next 1 or 2 days. So speed of service and always saying yes to the customer. I don't mean saying yes to mislead you because you can't always say yes. If the part for that vehicle's, you know, a 48-hour FedEx right away,
right.
I obviously can't say yes, but I work very hard to get that thing here. In today's modern age, parts can be UPS overnighted, 2-day aired. Put a focus on getting your family or your business fleet back out there on the road so that you're not inconvenienced. People love that.
I love that, too. It's the right paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
It's the right way to look at business. And too often you call a business any business, and you feel like you almost are an imposition to them. And that's just the wrong mindset. You've got to have that. I love your slogan, speed of service and yes. So it seems to me that today's world, we tend to gravitate towards the dealership. How do you combat that?
Well, in some cases you don't. The dealers in this town, and most towns are very good, they went through a really wrenching transformation in the 2007 to 2010 downturn. Huh. And they realized that they've got to step up their game. So I'm going to do many of the same things that a dealer does. And along with speed of service, and yes, here's what we try and do. I want to provide you with a technical level of expertise that's no different than the dealer. And that's very possible in today's training environment mm-hmm. and in today's technical environment with the tools that are available to all of us. In fact, if you come to one of our store operations, you're going to find that 8 out of 10 of our technicians were trained in a dealership. So provide that same level of technical expertise, and we try very consciously to price about 20% below most major dealer operations.
So there's a financial incentive.
There is.
John, give your contact information. Dowdy's Automotive, you've got 3 locations?
3 locations. We're over in Southeast Boise Federal Way at Broadway. We're on Meridian Road just south of Overland by the new Starbucks. Come have a latte and get your oil change. And we're out in Ontario, Oregon on 4th Avenue across from Gentry Ford. Okay. Come and visit us.
And if somebody wants to reach out to you, how would they get in touch with you?
You can go to Facebook or the web. Dowdy's is Dowdy's, dowdysauto.com, or call us at 342-3651 in Boise.
Awesome. John, great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Jim.
And we'll be back with the last segment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this. And welcome back to the final installment of Behind the Business. My guest today is the founder of ConvertKit, Nathan Berry. Nathan, we've been talking about how do I hire the right people? How do I manage their behavior so that I'm getting the results I want? And just working to tie all of that together, what is the secret formula for making sure you, as the owner, are getting return on investment for the huge payroll that you've
right.
got?
Yeah, so I mean, we mentioned earlier that trust is a big factor. I realize there's one thing in the hiring process that I do that probably isn't common elsewhere is that I hire a lot of people who have worked for themselves before. And so they're already used to working remotely, and they've often run their own company in the past. And so they're very results-driven rather than time in the chair or time in the office driven. And so that helps a lot. And we just set the expectation that, hey, if you want to leave during the middle of the day and go do something else for a while, that is totally fine. We don't even care that you hit 40 hours a week exactly, but know that everyone else in the company is very driven. We only care about the end results of what you do in that position. Mm-hmm. And so the bar is set very, very high. But however you want to accomplish it during the week, that's totally up to you.
What's your turnover rate when it comes to hiring and then people who wash out or don't make it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. We've fired 2 people, and we've had 2 people leave. So I guess out of 29 total, we've had 4. And, you know, when 2 people left, I had to ask myself, like, okay, what went wrong?
Why did they leave?
And yeah, but both of them were pursuing their own ventures. And so that's the downside of hiring entrepreneurial people.
Yeah.
Is that sometimes they want to be entrepreneurs.
So when you hire them, are you making them sign a non-compete or a non-disclosure?
No, I'm very open and transparent. So, like, you can even go on our website and see our exact revenue numbers today. So, you know, there's some high-level stuff there that our lawyers make us do, but I probably wouldn't even enforce it.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really interesting business model. You're a trusting soul.
Yes, let's see where it gets me.
Well, it's gotten you pretty well so far. What advice would you give to someone who, take me for example, Nathan, I'm more of a controlling manager. How do I learn to let go?
Yeah, I would just try it and say, give people not only the final outcome that you want, but also take a step back and tell them why you want that. So give them a bit more of the reasoning behind it, and then make yourself available and say, hey, if you need anything, I have this time blocked out, or come into my office, you know, send me an email, whatever. I'm here to help. But give them the clear outcome, why you want it, and then they can think on their own and see how they do. Some people are not made to work in that environment.
One thing I would say about Nathan's system is he's designed it to attract the right people. And so clearly identifying who is the right employee and then building the system to bring the right person in is going to help keep you from hiring people that just don't fit.
Right.
Give your contact information, Nathan, in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Yeah, we're at ConvertKit.com and just Nathan@ConvertKit.com.
Fantastic. Great guest you've been. Thank you so much for being on the show. We're going to be back with the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this.
The beautiful thing about Sandler is that it really gets to the heart of communication between a person who has a product or service and the potential client who's able to use that to be better. And Sandler really breaks that down, opens up the lines of communication, helps both parties win through the relationship.
Excuse me. Can I have your attention, please? Business owners, managers, sales professionals, are you tired of being disrespected by prospects that quibble over price, make excuses, avoid commitment, and pick your brain only to give those ideas to your competitors? Join us for the Sandler Training One-Day Sales Mastery Boot Camp, April 12th at 9 o'clock a.m. In this boot camp, you will learn how to deal with people who can't or won't make a decision, stop creating proposals used as bargaining chips to negotiate with your competitor, quit wasting time with people who will never buy from you, avoid making polished presentations to people who just want the lowest price. To register, call 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275, or go online to crossroads.sandler.com. That's April 12th at 9 o'clock a.m., Sandler Training's one-day sales mastery boot camp. Register by calling 208-429-9275, 208-429-9275, 208-429-9275. And welcome back to the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. My son, Justin, is with me in the studio today. We've been talking about the challenges that salespeople face. Some of those include things like getting a lot of think-it-overs, a slow no, and it happens because you don't help someone figure out how to buy from you. Oftentimes, salespeople are uncomfortable talking about money, so they don't mention it. They just figure out, okay, I'll give them a proposal. Now you're giving a proposal, and you don't know if you're high, medium, or low, and you don't have any idea what other people are pricing out. And frankly, I think you may end up doing too much unpaid consulting. Unpaid consulting is when you're going out on a sales call and you give all of the information they need to then become your competitor or give your hard-earned intellectual property to the competition.
Another thing salespeople struggle with is what we call personal rejection.
Yeah, so fear of rejection, right?
Fear of rejection is huge. And too often people forget how long life is and how little we are in our prospects' lives. So if you're, for instance, doing cold calling, if you're reaching out to people who have no idea who you are and you're just giving your 30-second commercial and heaven forbid you get hung up on, what are the chances you said something that really upset them?
Right.
Not likely.
Yeah.
Now, what are the chances of them remembering you next week?
Non-existent.
What about tomorrow? Well, it's our role, and while it can be very difficult not to take things like that, like being hung up on, like being ignored or put on hold for 15 minutes. Well, it's easy to take that and make it about me. Oh, they don't like me as a person. Realistically, it's nothing to do about you. We all have messaging. We all have advertisings and everything coming at us every day. And we are so busy that it's easy to let little things, unless there's a compelling reason to have that conversation. That's why one of the things we train on and teach on is finding pain, finding that compelling reason to make change. Unless there's a compelling reason to change, most people don't want to, and they don't need to spend time hearing about it.
Right.
So
if you're in sales, your job is to find that reason, and you do that by using the tools necessary to be successful at helping someone discover they need your help. Nobody wants to be sold.
Nobody.
Everybody needs help buying. They don't know how to buy your product. They need you to help them, but they don't want to be sold.
Exactly.
Buyers have a system that they use, and before Sandler, I didn't realize this. And I was really good at the traditional approach to selling and have been successful my whole life doing it. We bought the Sandler franchise because my wife, Joan, was actively involved in the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, and she was serving on a board of directors with a lot of contractors that were making a lot of money. We weren't making a lot of money. We were making a living. And so we started interviewing them to find out what is the common denominator that these successful contractors have. The ones that were doing outstanding were taking Sandler training. So we ended up trying to get a Sandler trainer to come to Boise, Idaho. It was wildly expensive. This was in 99. It ended up cheaper to just buy the franchise. Well, fast forward, I now hear through Sandler this thing called the buyer-seller dance. Buyers have four basic steps that they go through to buy. Sellers have four basic steps they go through to sell. And the buyer's first move is?
The first thing the buyer generally does is they mislead. And they don't mislead because they're mean people and they are trying to take advantage of you. They mislead because they don't know what else to do. Afraid of what might be a delicate situation. When buyers are misleading, they're not only misleading in a negative light. So they can mislead in a positive light. They could say, Justin, I'm dying here. My business is failing. I need your help. And they could be doing great. great. Or they could say, Justin, I am doing great. Business could not be better. This year's going to be our best year ever. And they could not be.
Yeah.
So one way or another, they may be misleading you.
It's a defensive posture to avoid being sold.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to be sold. And so the seller, the first step in the seller system is to try to qualify the buyer. You do some kind of needs analysis to figure out, is this somebody who wants a proposal? And if so, should I give them one? So already you see a disconnect. The buyers are withholding information. The sellers are trying to qualify on misleading information. It's already set up to not succeed. The next step in the seller system is...
On the seller side, after we've qualified, after we've found out, are they a viable prospect based on misleading information? Now we got to present. Because in the traditional sales system, we tell ourselves, if I want someone to buy from me, they have to know I am an expert.
Right.
And in order for them to know that I am that expert, I need to prove it to them by telling them all I know, showing them how great I am, explaining the wonders and marvels of the person who is Justin, right?
Right.
So I've got to tell them what an expert I am.
And meanwhile, the buyers are misleading step one. Step two is to get as much information as they can. So while you're busy presenting solutions, they're taking copious notes and they're going to use all of the information you give them for some purpose. Do you know how they'll use it? Do you know what they'll do with it? Generally speaking, not.
No.
But the buyer is taking information and collecting it. Now the seller knows, okay, I'm done with my presentation. What should I do?
It's time for the close.
Yeah.
Trial close. Would you like this in blue or red? I can deliver it Monday or next Friday. Which works better for you?
And salespeople are by nature, if you're paid by a commission, to some degree desperate.
Right.
You know you're there to sell them. And you've just given them your expertise and time and proposal. And now you better be closing them. Otherwise, you're just doing bidding for bidding's sake. And as soon as you start that pushy sales stuff, the buyers tend to resist and they go back to step one, mislead again. Gee, it sounds really good. I like what you came up with. I'm just not sure that right now is the right time. Why don't we do this? I'll call you next week. Or why don't you follow up with me next week and we'll see. I need to talk to someone else. There's always a million and one reasons that they don't want to be sold.
And then after they've used that technique, after they've misled yet again, they go into what we call the witness protection program, right? You cannot get a hold of them. They're hiding. They are so nice. Most people really are quite nice. They don't want to tell you no because they know you want a yes. So they avoid you so they don't have to say no. And meanwhile, the salesperson is following the 11th commandment of the sales Bible, which is thou shalt follow up. And they are reaching out. Hey, we had this great meeting. I'm so excited to get back in touch with you. Yada, yada, yada. In all reality, it's over. They've used your information. Yeah. If they were going to do business with you, they would have done it already.
And at some point, if you're in sales or a business owner, manager listening to us today, at some point you're going to get mad enough to say, you know what? Enough's enough. I'm not going to do this anymore. And it's at that point that you'll grow a spine and you'll figure out if you're going to be successful, you need a more sophisticated process for selling than the buyer's system for buying. And that's where the Sandler program comes in. We've got a boot camp coming up in, 2 weeks, Justin? Tell a little bit about what to expect at that boot camp.
So that boot camp's on April 12th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. In that boot camp, we're going to go over what is the Sandler methodology, what is the Sandler program that we teach our clients. We primarily put it on for clients. It's a great introduction to what it is we do. We make these open to the public because it is a great introduction to what we do, and people get a lot of value out of that.
If you've been listening to the program and you've thought, you know, I really should explore Sandler a little more, what is it, $400?
Yep, $399.
So $399, 8 hours of great training. It'll be a lot of fun. It's very interactive. We'll get to hear stories and share our story and find out what are some of the challenges that are currently keeping you from the success you want, and more important, what are some of the techniques, behaviors, and attitude changes that you can engage in immediately to get a different outcome?
Exactly.
Give that date and time one more time, Justin.
So it's going to be April 12th. That's a Wednesday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Mountain Time here in Boise, or we have a number of clients who are coming remotely as well.
So if you would like to join us remote, we use a software called WebEx. It's best if you have other people in the room with you, so you're your own self. satellite group because we do a lot of practicing.
Yep.
We believe that role-playing is where you practice. Don't practice in front of your buyers. All right, it's been a great weekend. Thank you all so much for spending time with us. Really appreciate it. If you would like any other information, you can reach us at area code 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. Have a great weekend. And remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it. So I have my client in the studio today, Juniper Cooper. Juniper, you've been enrolled in the Sandler program 4 months, five?
I think so, yeah, about five months.
Yeah, what do you think so far?
You know, I love it.
Really?
It is. We do so much training, and there's so much stuff out there. Sometimes I think as a salesperson who wants to be better or a business owner, you're often trying to, like, I think, get through the murky waters and decide really what to put your time and attention
in.
What I've loved about it is just how useful all the information is and applicable. It's very deep, you know. It's different than any other sales training I've taken.
And you've taken some sales training in the past.
Yeah, I've taken a lot of sales training.
What would you say as you're looking at the changes in your team, have you seen anything tangible yet that says this is paying off?
Absolutely, I have. Yeah. So just seeing in how my agents that work on my team interact with what we'd refer to as prospects. That'd be someone that we haven't decided to work together. Or even with our clients, just in their communication style and how they go about helping them is significantly better. In fact, Jim, I would say that it's so much more focused on the client and less on the agent than it's ever been before.
And it's not uncommon when we come into a company that we stir things up because it brings a new level of accountability. What have you seen in your team regarding that?
That's been huge. I think when you raise the bar, either people come to it or they say, you know, it's not really for me, and either way is fine. We're definitely committed to excellence because we're not perfect, and we're just looking to continually be better. So as a business owner, I definitely would recommend it because it puts you in a position where you have almost like a third party that you can rely on to help you bring that level of accountability in.
What would you say to somebody who's listening to us who thinks, you know what, the time it's going to take to be in training, the money it's going to take, I don't know that it's worth it. What would you say?
I'd say all the clients you didn't convert will more than enough pay for it and make the time worthwhile.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Juniper Cooper.